Can we take you back? You went back to Poland, obviously very dangerous time. Yes. What happened after that?
Well, we got to Poland and we reoccupied our flat. And on the 1st of September, you had it on the 3rd, but here we had it on the 1st, on a Friday, bombs fell in our backyard practically, and we discovered that the war started because the night before the atmosphere was electric with war, 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 and my father says, there will be no war. I'm sure the talks are going on somewhere to stop the nonsense. Well, during the night, the war was declared. We didn't know because we didn't have a radio at the time. Our radio had been broken. So we only knew when the bombs fell. And it was a German bomber, and he just saw the bombs in our back garden. And of course, panic and all kinds of things happened. And my father left the house on the 9th of September. There was a kind of panic among... people still don't know exactly what happened, but what we were aware of is that the main road from Warsaw out to east was absolutely full of people walking with bundles and suitcases, some on bicycles and the odd car here and there, the odd horse-driven vehicle, but mostly on foot, and it was like a river of people going along. And my father was sitting in the garden, and my mother says, "What's this? What are all these people doing?" And he says, "Well, I don't know. The weather's lovely. I'm not going anywhere." But my mother said, "Look, they're going. You go. You never know. It must be important." So she put some underwear and some sandwiches into his briefcase and sent him. And he went. Luckily, he was a good walker. Well, later, we heard what happened on the road. And we don't know why these people went. Most of them were young people. And a lot of them were Jews. Not all, but most of them were Jews, really. And the rumor was that the government in Warsaw, the rulers of Warsaw, decided that there's no point in trying to keep the Germans out of Warsaw. Better to go to the east and form a new army in eastern Poland. That was one theory. But we don't know because we didn't hear. And to this day, there is no settled theory why these people went.
But you must have, or I would imagine, your parents understood well that Hitler was going to be very dangerous for Jewish people.
Oh, of course they knew. I mean, my auntie who brought us here, she had lived in Germany until 1936. Mm. And she came over here almost en route to Canada. But while she was in Britain, in Leeds, she met her husband. And that was it. So we knew all right that things were happening. But we didn't know how bad it was. The idea was that they'll arrest people keep them in case something happens.
Detention?
Hostages, yes. And that if there was any outrage against the Germans, every tenth would be shot. Mm. Every tenth. That would be lucky, because every 9 out of 10 were killed. Anyway, so my father, who was already in his 50s then, decided he'd go. And about a month later, my mother decided she couldn't. And the Germans had already stepped into the town. They occupied it after battles and bombings and all kinds of things that happened. We watched Warsaw being bombed for 2 weeks, and because we were just outside of Warsaw. And my mother felt the weight of the German occupation because the janitor of our flat suddenly stopped calling her Mrs. Leviner. He just called her Leviner. Mm-hmm. And it was very disrespectful. Mm-hmm. And also she was in a queue for bread, and there were people saying to the Germans who were watching the queue, "This is a Jew, take him out of here." You know, she had to make sure that she had rations for bread, coal and so on. But everywhere, the local Poles were worse than the Germans. I'm not saying they were all like that, but there were enough of them to cause trouble. because they were anti-Semitic. Well, you know. So my mother decided, oh, I'm not staying here anymore. And she managed to organize an escape for us, for the two of us. We traveled with a young man who had been in this small place near Warsaw. The place is called Otwock, so I'll refer to it as Otwock. It was a holiday resort, but people went there to be treated for TB. It was supposed to be a wonderful place to get treatment for TB. The weather
the
was,
air would be...
The air was pure, and the weather was usually very even and so on. And this young man was 25, and he was going home with his nurse. And his home was in Vilna. Oh. So my mother joined them, and it was a droshky. Don't know whether you know what a droshky is.
Not a horse and
it's a horse-drawn carriage, but it's very comfortable. You know, it's like this settee, and there are seats facing this way and seats facing that way. And of course the young man with his nurse sat there, and my mother and I sat facing backwards. But there was enough room to take sufficient luggage, and it was rather uneventful our travel from. But on the way, we saw the carcasses of dead horses and broken cars and broken bicycles, and this was the leftover of that original exodus. It was shot at by low-flying German planes, and they had to hide in the surrounding woods, and after a while they didn't walk by day, only by night, and by day they hid in the woods. And my father had a hole in his briefcase where a shrapnel or something would have killed him if it wasn't for his briefcase. And there were lots of bodies on the way, but I suppose the surrounding peasants or something must have given them a decent burial, because we didn't see any dead bodies, but we saw dead horses and broken down cars which ran out of petrol. There was nowhere to get petrol. And if the horse was shot from under a horse-drawn carriage, we couldn't do anything else about it. And bicycles, various things like that, on the way. And we stayed in peasant huts overnight. And at one point we were chased by a German patrol, and luckily our driver, who was a bit deaf, we made him stop, and the Germans came over to us and they started pulling us out of the carriage. And someone knew, I think the nurse knew German, and she says, "Ein Kranker, don't touch him because he's ill." But they were still pulling us, and my mother decided to pretend that they wanted her gloves. So she let them pull her gloves off. But another, an older German came, and he came, "Lass sie, leave them alone, let them go." So they let us go.
And did you know what had happened to your father by then?
Well, we had rumours. It's amazing. He would send a message. There were no post or telephone. Mm-hmm. But someone would be coming back and would let someone else know that Leviner was seen in Brest or in Rovno or in any of these towns. So my mother thought she'd find him all right. Mm-hmm. We went for Bialystok, my mother and I. My father had friends everywhere because before the war he was an agent for a publishing firm, and he used to place book orders, especially among the intelligentsia and among institutions like libraries or schools. So he had lots of friends there. So in Bialystok we found someone where we could at least have a corner, because the place was overrun with refugees. Mm. It was absolutely impossible to stick a needle anywhere. The flat we were in, he was a manufacturer, and he had a big flat by Bialystok standards, 4 rooms, kitchen and bathroom. And in these 4 rooms, there were never less than 16 people. That's together. Family were just himself, his wife, and a little boy. And luckily my father knew him, and that's why we could get in there. But my father couldn't. There was just room for me and my mother. And my father found another accommodation on a table. In other words, he would spread his bedding on the table, and in the morning he'd roll it up and put it under the table.
And you met him there then?
Yes, we met him within a few days of arriving. I can't remember, the following day. It was quite easy because people, you know, passed on the news. His wife was there. And we eventually moved out just outside of Bialystok, my mother and I, because my mother was hoping to do some sewing. But the move was wonderful for me. It was a very severe winter. It was, the ice was absolutely covering the ground and the snow and everything. But I got going to school. I was always keen to go to school. Mm-hmm. Now, there was a choice of different language schools because the Russians had just stepped in and they were the idealistic communists and they were going to encourage expression of ethnic cultures. So they allowed various schools and in fact encouraged various schools to flourish. So there was a school where the language of instruction was Yiddish and one in which Polish was the main language. Then there was a Belarus and a Russian. So I had a choice of four. And I said to my mother, I want to go to the Yiddish school. I've never been to a Yiddish school. I wanted to go to the Yiddish school. And it was a most wonderful school with very devoted teachers. And I learned Yiddish, learned to read Yiddish and write Yiddish, and some science in Yiddish as well.
That'd be very handy in Woodfire Presbyterian.
Oh, yes. But yeah, well, there was a lesson I could pass on. It was about convection. The teacher took a candle and held it high up in the open door and the flame pointed out. And he held it down below the bottom of the door and the flame pointed in. So he says, you see, cold air comes in, gets warmed and goes up and comes out of the door. Convection.